I'm now joined by violinist Joshua Bell. It's so great to have you back in Richmond.
Oh, it's great to be back. The orchestra sounds great, and I'm really had a ball here, really.
Now, we know you as a virtuoso violinist, but you're also conducting these days. You became music director of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields in 2011. New adventure for you. Has conducting always been something you wanted to do?
Well, I guess yes. I mean, it's something I've watched a lot of conductors over the years and played with so many conductors and love the repertoire and the symphonic repertoire. So it was kind of a natural thing to want to do. And now it's already my sixth year as music director of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. And I just came back a few days from Europe where we toured. You know, I got to do on this last tour Beethoven 5th and 6th symphonies and recorded with them the Bruch Concerto and Bruch Scottish Fantasy, leading, you know, conducting and playing, which is a wonderful, fun thing to do. So, yeah, I'm having a blast with that, and it's a whole new chapter in my life, musical life.
So you have your own musical ideas about each piece that you play.
Of course.
How do you work with the conductor when you go to a new situation and you're playing with an orchestra that you haven't seen before?
Yeah, it's really, at this stage in my career, I'm usually going back to places with conductors I've worked with before. I have the opportunity to, you know, 3 years ahead of time when these things are usually booked, although in this case was very, very last minute, but that's a whole other story.
Yes, it was.
I have the opportunity to say, I'm not sure I get along with that conductor. Maybe we don't do it. With Stephen Smith, I knew that we would get along. I think he's a wonderful conductor, and it's always... you know, it's different every time. You're different. Sometimes I learn from the conductors, and sometimes they come up with new ideas that I hadn't thought of, and sometimes things happen in the moment that's you don't expect, or for the good or for the not good. But that's the adventure of live music, and I love live performance as much as I enjoy recordings. This is where it's at, you know, playing in the moment, and you never know what's going
to
happen.
We're so privileged to have you back in Richmond on short notice, too.
Thank you.
Amazingly busy schedule. How do you find time to practice, or do you?
Well, this happened to me my 1 week off, and they asked me if I might fill in for Mr. Lang Lang, who was originally scheduled. Right. Since I respect Lang Lang, I was happy to be the fill-in. And also, I had fond memories of this orchestra. So it just so worked out. But I don't have much free time. You know, I'm playing 150 concerts a year and traveling, you know, 250 days a year. So generally, I'm trying to play less, but I'm having a hard time saying no to things because I just enjoy playing music. I have the best job, you know, in the world.
You've become pretty much the most prominent violinist of your generation. Are there any specific violinists that you kind of looked to in the past for some inspiration?
Oh, I mean, so many great violinists of the past. In fact, I mean, growing up, my teacher was Joseph Gingold. He was a student of Eugène Ysaÿe, who is really one of the great violinists of the 19th century. So I was connected through one person to one of the biggest names of the end of the 19th century. And then through him, Gingold knew personally Jascha Heifetz and Fritz Kreisler and all the greats of the beginning of the 20th century. So those were really my heroes growing up, like the old greats like Elman and Heifetz and Kreisler. And of course, after that, there are many others that are still living today that I admire. So I was inspired by many, too. But my teacher, probably number one, Gingold, was an amazing violinist hearing him play in lessons was a huge inspiration. And now it's fun to see the next generation. Today I got to play Bach double with Sophie Lee, and she's only, I don't know if she's maybe 12 years old or 13, I'm not sure, but she's incredibly talented. I get to follow now her career and see how things go. She seems like she's got a good head on her shoulders, so I think it's going to go well.
It's got to be extra special for you to share the stage with such an up-and-coming artist, just like you were just a few years ago, right?
Yeah, just a few years ago. It's fun, and it's fun to do the Bach double, which is an iconic piece, and it's also always a fun piece to share with someone new. You know, I played it with my own teacher. I played it with countless violinists, younger, older, as I was growing up. It's one of the pieces you learn as a Suzuki student from book 4 or 5. I can't remember what it is. It's just such an iconic piece. So it's a perfection. You know, the Bach double concerto is just one of the gems of the repertoire. So it's fun to get to play this with her. I was so glad when they suggested it. It was a treat.
Now, after the Bach, you take over the spotlight with the Symphonie Espagnole by Eduard Lalo. Can you tell us a little bit about the piece? Are there some musical highlights that we should listen for?
Well, I mean, the Lalo was written for Sarasate, the great violinist, another one of the great violinists besides Isai at the time. Same time, Sarasate was sort of the more flamboyant virtuoso. He was the new Paganini at the end of the 19th century. And so Lalo, the French composer, wrote for Spanish violinist and wrote a piece in Spanish style, which was also in vogue at that time. There are many, you know, from Iberia and Carmen. There are so many great sort of Spanish pieces written by French musicians, French composers. So this is one of them. And actually, his most famous piece, maybe his best piece, I don't know all of his works, but it's the thing that's really lived on and made him, you know, known. And I love the piece. It's untraditional. It's in five movements, five shorter vignettes. Each one has its own distinct character and charm, and it's got everything in it. And the slow movement, the fourth movement, is a sort of funereal something right out of Carmen. Actually, it's sort of like it's something, but very deep and wonderful. And there's a lot of light, fun stuff too. So it's a good piece to end the program with, a real show piece.
If our listeners are interested in your recording, Sony Classical just released a new 14-CD set of albums that you have recorded for the label over the past 20 years. I guess you could sort of say this is a recapitulation of your career so far?
The new recording set? I guess so. It's kind of a, you know, I'm glad to have these sort of this collection for my grandkids when they come along. You know, it sort of represents, you know, body of work. So I've made now, you know, in my life about 40 recordings over the years, including the Lalo, which I played today. I made when I was 20 years old with Charles Dutoit and the Montreal Symphony. But I still love playing live. You know, this is what I enjoy the most.
Well, Joshua, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, and I look forward to the performance tonight.
Well, thank you. We have a wonderful orchestra here, and I've been enjoying rehearsing and looking forward to playing.
In just a few moments, Joshua Bell will take the stage with 13-year-old violin prodigy Yesung Sophie Lee. Sophie is here to chat with us for just a few minutes. Sophie, it's so great to welcome you to Richmond.
Thank you.
You began playing the violin at age 4, and you're already quite an accomplished musician. Currently the concertmaster of the Seattle Youth Symphony Orchestra, how did you become so interested in the violin at such a young age?
Well, my mom just wanted me to have a casual music background, so I just casually started playing the violin because my hands were too small for the piano. But when I first started to play the violin, I just really loved the sound of it, and I got really hooked onto it. And so I decided to stay with it. And a while after, I started listening to Heifetz and Menuhin and Oistrakh recordings, and I always played along with a made-up violin with a baseball bat and a stick. And my brother would play along as like a duet using like whatever was around the house to imitate a cello.
How neat. So what's it like at school? You have an extraordinary talent that is obviously very different from other students. What do your friends think about your music?
Some of them don't actually know I play violin.
Really?
Yeah. And then the other half of them, my closest friends, well, some of my friends think it's just like an after-school thing, like soccer. And my closest friends know that about everything. And so I kind of feel like I'm like Superman or something. There's one side of me that's like going to school, takes tests, and hangs out with my friends. And then when I come home or go to lessons, I'm traveling all over the place giving concerts.
Well, you must dedicate a lot of time to practicing. Yeah. So do you have some interests outside of music as well?
Yeah, I actually really like to go bike riding, and I like to read a lot. Right now I'm reading a book called The Lord of the Flies, mostly because it's required by school, but I am actually enjoying it a lot. And so I really like to go bike riding with my brother in the mornings just to get awake a little bit before school, just going riding around the neighborhoods. Yeah.
Last year in London, you won the junior first prize in the Menuhin competition. And for those that don't know, this is a really big deal. Let's talk a little bit about your experience at the competition.
I think I learned a lot at the competition, especially because I had to play this contemporary piece for the finals called Spiegel by Colomino y Bosch. And when I first got the music, I was really worried if I could actually make this performance of this piece really convincing. But as I played and worked through it more, I think I became more closer with the piece. And what was really helpful was that at the competition, I got to play the Spiegel to the composer of piece. And he gave me advice, and which was really helpful. And at the end of the competition, I was really honored to receive the composer prize. And I think I realized that, because before I thought that contemporary music was really awkward and weird to play, but now I'm actually really enjoying it. And I learned that it's important to have like a wide range of music.
Now the sky is truly the limit for you. Do you think at this point performing will remain your passion, or do you possibly see yourself doing something else down the road?
I think performing will be my main passion, and I will definitely like to do that. And maybe when I get a little bit older and wiser, I'll start giving masterclasses maybe, and maybe start teaching along the side as well as performing. And when I become like a great musician, maybe like Joshua Bell, maybe I'll like to play the Bach double with some younger generations and give them a great opportunity, just like Joshua Bell's doing for me. So
it's got to be a great opportunity here for you, and exciting to go on stage with Joshua in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
Well, Sophie, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and good luck out there on stage. Welcome to our River City.
Thank you.
Stephen, we here at WCVE are so pleased to be sharing the excitement of tonight's 60th anniversary season opener with our listeners. As always, thank you so much for spending some of your time with us.
It's my pleasure. And thank you to WCVE for being a part of this opening night and enabling more and more people to hear us.
There's a lot of planning that goes into any concert, but certainly there's something a little extra special about a season opening gala performance like this. How far in advance do you start putting the program together?
Well, typically we plan everything a year or two or even three in advance, but particularly for such a big deal opening night of an anniversary season, this is certainly one we were working on for at least that long.
And the pianist Long Long was originally supposed to join us, but due to an unfortunate injury was unable to be here. Joshua Bell stepped up to the plate. You've got to be thrilled about that.
Of course we are, yeah. He was here two or three years ago, and we were thrilled with him. Of course, we've known him for years, all of us by recording and appearances. But to be able to share the stage again with this great artist is just a huge pleasure.
So let's chat a little bit about what we've already heard tonight. The theater set for orchestra by Ulysses Kay. A little unusual choice for the first piece of the season.
Well, maybe. But on the other hand, it's very buoyant and festive. I think it's just the ideal kind of piece to start a season. Ulysses Kay, African-American composer, who's not heard as much as he should be, wrote a ton of music and was really one of the great figures of American music in the 20th century. So we're delighted to represent him tonight.
And the masterpiece, Ein Heldenleben, known as A Hero's Life, a tone poem by Richard Strauss. He includes quotations from his earlier work, so many think that maybe it's an autobiography.
Well, many people do think that, and I think to varying degrees of actual truth. Strauss didn't speak a whole lot about it, but I think it is clear that he thought of himself as the hero in some ways. I think in other ways he thought of it as a much more expansive kind of tale. But this idea of the quotations from a lot of his earlier tone poems, earlier opera, I think do give us the idea that he certainly was basing it the work on his own life. But again, I think in a larger than life aspect, more than just himself, but a much more worldly kind of hero.
Hmm. Now the second half of tonight's program features our soloist, the one and only Joshua Bell, and 13-year-old violin prodigy Yisong Sophie Lee. This was not the original plan. So how did you get it all together so quickly?
It wasn't, and we're thrilled that both of them are here. It gives us a little bit of a double attraction, as it were. I think it's really exciting to see Josh, you know, one of the great artists of our time, and Sophie, who's probably one of the great artists of our future.
And they're playing the Bach Concerto for two violins. It's a rather popular work. He wrote it during the time that he put together his Brandenburg Concerto. So do you find it to be a rather typical work of Bach, or is there something that stands out a little bit different for our listeners?
I think it's typical, I think, of Bach's, what we think of as orchestral or more instrumental works, like the Brandenburg Concerti. He also obviously wrote this gorgeous vocal work, religious work, keyboard works. But this piece is very much about the equal interplay of two soloists. There really isn't a more prominent, less prominent role. It's two equal partners. And as such, it's one of the great pieces of the repertoire, the slow movement particularly, one of the most beautiful things Bach ever wrote.
Looking forward to it. This is a big season for the Richmond Symphony, the 60th year. So what's on the agenda for concertgoers to hear over the next 8 months?
A lot is the short answer. We planned this season very specifically that it would be an entire season of celebrations and excitement. And so in addition to this great opening night coming up in October, we have the Bartok Concerto for Orchestra showing off the fabulous symphony and a group Time for three young string players who play a wide variety of music from all over the world and all over time. And there are just so many highlights through the season. Our fantastic chorus featured in Mozart's Mass in C Minor in November, and also again at the very end of the season, which is maybe the other big pillar, is the world premiere of the piece that we have commissioned to celebrate our 60th anniversary by Mason Bates, a Richmond native, grew up here listening to the symphony, studying music, and now has gone on to be one of the most in-demand and widely respected composers of his generation.
And I bet you're already thinking about what's in store for next year, right? You got to plan ahead.
Well, as I said, we do plan ahead. So we've got many more spectacular things coming after this celebratory season.